Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's 2:34 a.m. in the center of the world, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello and welcome to Night Call, a call-in show for our dystopian reality. I'm Emily Yoshida. I am in Los Angeles, and with me on the other line, as always, are
Molly Lambert and
Tess Lynch.
Today, we will be joined by our special guest, Nikki Mayard. We'll be talking about The Vow. We're going to be talking about some voting stuff. And surprisingly, shockingly, more pyramids. The pyramids just are coming out the wazoo. Everybody's got a pyramid. So, but first... we are going to take a night call.
Hi, Night Call. I have a prediction. I think that Katherine Oxenberg, the former Dallas actress and current NXIVM mom warrior, is going to be cast as a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills. It just feels like she has the right pedigree. I mean, she looks great. So I'm wondering if we will see that in 2021. Thanks. Bye.
Wow, great question. We are joined to answer this question by our friend Nikki Mayard, who is a writer for Adult Swim's Laser Wolf and Netflix Intergalactic. Nikki, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
This question is great.
Has this occurred to you at all?
No, but I have a really weird relationship with the Real Housewives franchise. I really love it, but I don't, over the last few years, I don't really watch TV as well anymore.
Right.
But my whole timeline does. So I know things without having to watch. It's kind of like my relationship with Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Yes.
I watched enough seasons that now I can just watch other people talk about seasons.
You can keep up by osmosis. It's a multi-platform experience.
I'm planning like a mega binge watch of like all of them if I can, like in the deep winter, in the deep COVID winter when my brain is done.
I got back into Beverly Hills recently. I had the same thought. So yeah,
they're messy. I like them. I'm trying to get into Potomac.
Oh, Potomac's the best.
Because I got into them last season because I was like, yes. Anything that's like a lot of black women, I'm like, fine.
Potomac is amazing because they still let their real lives be plot lines on the show. Whereas on Beverly Hills, they like keep it, they kind of have like fake plot lines for the show. And then if something real did happen this season, seemingly, mm-hmm. which was a good season where Denise Richards had a sexy gay affair with Brandi Glanville. But The main reason I think Katherine Oxenberg couldn't be on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills is that they all live in the Valley now.
Oh, and really? She's in Malibu and it's too far?
She's just a real housewife of Malibu.
No. But not to make this too much like the Californians, but getting from the West Valley to Malibu is actually not a huge schlep. I mean, let's be honest.
They're closer together than like Hollywood and Malibu is like an hour and a half away from where.
I would watch The Real Housewives of Malibu if they wanted to do a second LA franchise.
Wasn't Yolanda at some point?
Yolanda was in Malibu and Yolanda is just like Katherine Oxenberg.
Yes. Yeah, they're the same genre of women, I feel like.
Yeah.
Katherine is also royalty, right? So I'm imagining, like,
she's got that European kind of je ne sais quoi.
My favorite is I watch with the subtitles on, and when she's talking to her mom, it just says princess, and you're like, princess, who the yeah. Like, it just says princess.
Nikki, I was going to ask you, we were talking before we started recording about whether or not we have been able to actually watch every episode of The Vow so far. Have you watched every episode?
I've watched every episode. It's eight, right?
Yeah.
The finale hasn't happened yet, right? Yeah, I've watched every episode.
We're all in here on The Vow, even though it is, the pacing of The Vow is so incredibly slow.
I am all in. I will say I'm not up to date, but I don't mind being spoiled because I think, as we'll discuss, the distribution of information that The Vow is doing is very manipulative. So I don't mind like being spoiled.
Let's talk about that. So on the most recent episode, episode 8, to spoil you, Emily, all of a sudden they like revealed all the real stuff that they haven't been showing the entire show about Keith just being a straight up men's rights activist.
Yeah.
He's literally a living meninist. It's disgusting.
It's also just like, I was kind of saying that I liked the show, even though it is edited super weird and the information is laid out in a super strange way. Like, they have never given us a bio of Keith Raniere, even though we're 8 episodes into the show. We don't know like what his childhood was like, which seems relevant for...
Well, wasn't it? He was a judo champion at age 11 or something, well, as Nippy said.
We hear what he tells people in Nexium.
He hatched out of an egg and was immediately good at judo. That is his biography.
Molly, was it you that called it, like, it's kind of like The Last Dance? Somebody described it as being similar to The Last Dance. It was birthed.
Yeah. It was meant to be, destined.
That's like how I feel like Keith Raniere, like, became. Like, he was born with his barrel chest and rounded shoulders.
No, it was like super, it's just like The Last Dance, because it's edited, the timeline makes no sense, and they keep jumping around back in time, so you're like, wait, I thought we were up to this, and then they're like, oh no, now we're back at like the beginning of DOS or whatever. It just is very confusing, but maybe that is to emulate the feeling of being in a cult.
I don't know. The first time that I noticed this, it wasn't with anything so, I don't know, damning or anything. It was just the omission of the fact that...
Sarah Edmondson.
That she was married and was like married within Nexium and had a partner in Nexium. And none of that, like we spent maybe 2 episodes with her before we learned that, which it's not like... crucial information, but it really changes the way that you think of her within the organization. Like, being married to somebody within it, like at an all Nexium ceremony, like up until that point, it felt like, oh, she's just like trying out this thing and she's on an adventure and she's discovering herself. But it's like, no, this was like, you were super installed at this point. It wasn't like it, and you were, you know, opening centers everybody, and stuff with this person.
Everybody making this documentary was so deep in Nexium, is what you find out eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nikki, you had some like good thoughts just about the cult in general.
I think like when I first started watching it, okay, the first thing I didn't like was how they made it seem like Sarah and Mark were a thing. And then they were like, oh, wait, you guys were married to separate people. And I was like, why did we start it this way? It didn't have to go this way. I didn't need the weird fake relationship for an episode. And then they're like, we were just friends. And I was like, I question, like, that whole framing made me feel really weird. And then on top of that, like, you're moving through it and you're like, they're not really telling you where they come from either. So like with the bio, the lack of bio of Keith Raniere, you don't have a bio on any of these people. I don't know where they're from. I don't know what if they're rich, I'm assuming all of them are rich. I just am, because I'm looking around at their houses and I'm like...
And their ability to travel and stuff.
Yeah. And yeah. it's like it was nothing. Like, everyone was like, I went to Albany. I was like, you just packed up? Like, yeah. No questions asked. So I'm like, there's a lot of like, it's like a very tight framework. And I'm like addicted to it because of that. But I'm also like, who the hell are all of you?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Mark, I feel like we get the most background on, but it's also because, I mean, you can't really talk about Mark without talking about what the bleak do we know. So we, you know, and then you're like, okay, he has money because he is a filmmaker and had this, you know, a couple of pretty successful movies in the pre-QAnon zone. But yeah, like but other than that, it's like, oh, I was an actress. It's like, I don't know, like, how does she have that? I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, where did you come from? Are you like a trust fund person who needed something to do and went to LA and tried to be an actress? Are you from the Midwest and you really worked your way over there? So that those things to me make a difference in how I'm understanding how you came to executive success program.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have my ideas. And also, like, I didn't feel, the funny thing is, in the beginning, I noticed that I didn't feel like anyone was particularly dumb. Whereas, like, where I'm obsessed with cult stuff because I'm always like, how? I'm always from the Keith perspective. I'm always like, how do you get people to just hang on to your every word? Like, but when I thought about it, I was like, when they first started it, I was like, oh, okay, I get it. This is like a, like 1,000 of those self-improvement classes. You know what I mean? And I could see how they got into it. Like, I wasn't like, oh, this is weird. You went out of your way and started dressing in all red and moved into some weird plane in Oregon, you know, like, I'm like, oh, this sounds like you were taking some classes to try to get yourself together. But like the sashes. When we get to the sashes, nobody was like, is there a dweeb in charge?
It resembled an acting class. Like, we talked on the podcast a few weeks ago about how in the first two episodes or so, it really looked exactly like any kind of acting class or like a really intense writer's group. And so you could see how it would appeal to people in the entertainment industry. But the sashes, it's true that it's really the juxtaposition of the visuals, you know, of them wearing the sashes and them doing these strange presentations and stuff. And it's, you juxtapose that with what's supposedly the basis of this organization. And you're like, there's a really big disconnect here. You guys are acting pretty cuckoo.
And they act like it's nothing when they started calling him Vanguard. But I'm like, that's the thing that made you susceptible to a cult. I need a little more background about who you are to help me understand why you heard the word Vanguard and you weren't like...
I think there's a group vibe thing, though. And I think that's the thing that I mean, that's the cult thing in general, but I think that's also something that a lot of these people share, is that like they wanted to be like in a club. Mm-hmm. They wanted to. And so it's like if everybody else is saying, oh, it's normal to call this guy Vanguard, it's normal to wear a sash, like you want to be.
Yeah.
You want to be accepted by this club. And if you say, LOL, what's the sash business, then you might not get to, you know, go to the volleyball.
It feels like they really they lay it on pretty thick at the beginning to get rid of anybody who might know that this was a cult.
Yeah.
The people that stay are all like a certain type of person. And
right.
I think I said the other day, like, there's no black people in that cult.
That's right.
Like, and that is remarkable. Like, not even like one random, like, oh, hey, you know, how'd you end up here?
There was one.
There are people in the pictures.
There's
and there
one.
Are like people in the classes. Like, there are people in the classes, but you can... There's a really good one. There's one. There's like two people. There's one lady that's in the classes and it kind of seems like she's a part, but she's never shown again. So you can tell that, you know, if she is, it's like she's still in like worker bee mode. And then there's a picture of a guy at one of the, like, they like show a picture and there's a black dude and he's literally made, his eyes are like popping out of his head. Like, he's like looking at the person next to him like, what the fuck?
But there is also, there's the woman, so there's the anonymous source, the woman in Brooklyn, and she was brought in by a black woman, she says.
Yes,
she was like specifically thrown by like, oh, and it was in DOS too. So it was like talking about the master slave thing and her being like, really? Like, this is what you're into?
It's not really like that. It's not even like that. But like, as I really feel like when she said she's in Brooklyn, I was like, yeah, this woman literally looked at her and was like, it's not even really like that. Like, like, I can hear the voice. I was like, it's like my brother when he's like getting my mom. You know, like, I'm like, I know know the voice. I know the voice that she used to get you to do this. But also, that like that, I think when I say that, it's not to say like we're less susceptible to cults. It's to say that like this is clearly also speaks to the class of people that were in this group and how they like actively were not really trying to let in people that didn't look like them. You know what I'm saying? Like the reason I love The Vow, it's like my favorite genre of movie, show, anything, which is white people being horrible to white people. It's like no one has to watch any trauma because everyone's just like, oh, y'all keeping it inside, internal, that's great. Like everyone here is privileged. Fantastic.
That's why Katherine Oxenberg belongs on Housewives of Beverly Hills. That's like the peak of that genre.
She's like, I gotta get my daughter arrested. I'm like, fascinating. Fascinating.
Guys, exciting news. India Oxenberg, she got out in NXIVM, I think.
Okay.
Oh.
Also, they got a season two. I don't know if y'all
saw
it.
They got a season two.
Yeah.
What, like season two of what? As soon as they got up to like, this woman lives in Malibu in this beautiful palace and she was on a soap opera and she's like a white woman whose daughter is named India. I was like, I know these people.
Yep. Oh, totally.
So this is like an aspect of the show that I want to get on that I don't think we've talked about before. And it's sort of that like white people being horrible to each other genre, but it's also like there's something about the opening of the opening title sequence of the show that rubs me the wrong way, like from day one. First of all, like I don't know why the filmmaking team who makes it are referred to as the others, but it sounds culty already.
I know,
like, it's without the last E, and it's like the
tumblers,
the tumblers. So there's this this thing of like, okay, there's already this sort of like new agey woo woo collective that's making this documentary. And then the opening is like these images of our main subjects, like Bonnie and Mark and Sarah, like having these introspective walks and staring at the water. And it's very much like, you know, like searching stock photos for like troubled woman, victim, something like that. And it's all this like, it feels like we're going to watch this show about these people who are purely and specifically victims healing from this trauma. Like it's a very like healing from trauma, like self-help type imagery and vibe. And that I think should have been a red flag to me when I started watching this, because it's so much more complicated than that. And I don't think the show is equipped to deal with that because they are getting their story from this very specific side that is just as culpable in many ways.
You haven't like, even watched episode 8 yet, right?
So no, episode 8 there.
I had to pace. That was the one that actually like set, because that one actually features like you get to see what the abuse is, like what the actual problem with this cult was. And the thing that blew my mind when I watched episode 8 was the lack of accountability. Like that was the point where I was like, Mark, honestly, like,
yeah,
my guy, like, you know, there's a scene on the pier where Nippy basically is like, what are you doing? Like, why are you trying to talk yourself? Because he's being like, we're good people. It was a good thing. And my theory is that Mark wants to be Keith.
100%.
Like I don't know how much he believes this because I don't know him and I'm not his therapist. So I'm not going to conjecture too much on it. But it's like, I believe that he wants to be Keith. He believes that there's a good way to be Keith. And I'm like, the fact that you even want to be this is already bad.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's no way to make wanting to be this person good. And I think, I mean, I'd be interested to see him have a mental breakdown from realizing that season two.
That's what's going in season two. I know.
But he, like, interrupts his wife at the end of episode 8. You know, her and Catherine are laughing about, like, you know, they're just laughing at the absurdity of not one of them not saying anything about how absurd some of the rituals looked, like she was sleeping in a dog bed or something. And he just like flies off the handle. And my favorite part is as he's doing it, Bonnie looks up at him. She goes, I'm fine, just so you know, I'm okay. And I'm like, that should have been the title sequence of the whole documentary.
That's also very, you know, it ties in with the whole society of protectors and Jeunesse and how there's just this like rampant misogyny that we're just finding. I mean, we always kind of knew it was in there, but in episode 8, they really lay it bare. And I think maybe episode 8 was also where they talked about the fact that Katherine Oxenberg had brought India into this organization.
Hello.
hello. I mean, the whole time you're thinking that she's, as the caller put it, a mom warrior, where she's just been horrified by this the entire time. But she dragged her daughter into this and now is upset that India remains there, you know?
Like, when her mom stopped going, did she not check on India and say, hey, I'm kind of cutting myself off from this because it feels something?
She and her mom went together for like 2 years.
Right.
See, that's so fucked up. Like I don't know. I haven't gone to this part yet, but like, mm-hmm. you can still lay out an interesting and complicated narrative that is surprising about how people get involved in an organization like this without withholding that degree of information. Like, you
can, or putting it in episode 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, somebody was saying, like, why did I watch 8 hours of this stuff to get to this stuff? And I was like, well, that's how a cult works. They're like, mm-hmm. all the interesting info is going to be a secret that we'll tell you at the end. I will say, this is incredibly fucked up, but episode 8 was like the first time that Keith Raniere shows like real cult leader charisma.
Yep.
That you understand why people got in this cult. It's like they show all the Frank T.J. Mackey stuff that he does, which is like, you understand suddenly, like, oh, he's not just this like gentle fake youth pastor guy. His whole thing is like, you know, the cock is king, like master the cunt stuff, which is like, oh, okay, that is a totally different thing than just like self-improvement, you know.
They set it up well, because the episode before that, when the lady's talking about how he was playing, he was like pressing her pressure point, and that's how he got her to stop smoking. But then when she came out of the room, someone was like, you were in there for 2.5 hours. And I was like, this man sent you into a fugue state? Like,
yeah.
What? So, you know, like, and like, we, you know, it's so easy when you first see him on screen to be like, I think you described it so well, Molly. You were like, this camp counselor. I'm like, yeah, like, you, everyone feels like they know this dude. And like, if you have been through certain experiences in your life, or have you learned certain things like that, he probably looks like a walking red flag to you. Not to say if he doesn't, that you're any better or less. Trauma works differently. But, you know, it's like, I'm looking at him and I'm like, ugh. You know?
Yeah.
And
like,
and, but you know that there has to be something. Like, sure, they look it to you, but you know that there has to be something that got all these people to believe in them. And you're watching episode 8. And I think the most ridiculous part is when he is talking about what the level 10, like you made up these modules or whatever the hell, right? And he's like, you girls couldn't handle a 10. We just sexually assault you.
A 10 is shocking.
It's when he jumps up and goes boo, and then he has the woman go boo, and he's like, no, that doesn't scare me at all.
I would have punched him in the face.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step, and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have to talk about this because, Molly, you've been watching this Investigation Discovery series about Keith Raniere, which gets into a lot of the stuff that The Vow has not gotten into.
And
there's also a Daily Mail article about, like, the fact that he may or may not have literally killed at least a few women.
He may have murdered, like, four women.
Yeah, including... is her name Pamela?
Yeah.
Who's referenced in the documentary, a longtime girlfriend of his who dies of cancer. But she's not the only person to have died of cancer who dated Keith Raniere. It's really, yeah.
Do you know about this, Nikki?
Molly gave me a little heads up about the four women. I didn't know how, I figured Pamela was one of them. But I didn't know how they had all died, and that they had all died of cancer.
So two of them were presumed suicides, and two of them had cancer. And then many other women got sick when they were living with him. And so this documentary, which is called "The Lost Women of NXIVM," it raises the question of, did he poison the women that lived with him with rat poison? Because they found traces of barium and bismuth in a hair sample. From one of the participants, and they were like, you've got crazy heavy metals in your hair. What's going on? And then they also had Frank, investigator Frank from the from The Vow. He weighed in on this as well.
The craziest one, I mean, the poisoning ones are obviously crazy, but the one that they sort of, it's just a one episode. And it's also a very weird documentary. It involves our man, Frank, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Who's Frank a weirdo?
With the blog.
I'm obsessed with Frank.
I think Frank and Catherine got a little Love Jones going on. So if they go on Real Housewives, I need to know.
Yeah, there's something, like, this documentary is also involves Frank. And then the person who told me about it also said that it's maybe like funded by Roger Stone because they were trying to make some sort of a connection between NXIVM and like the Clinton body count thing. So it is possibly a little like QAnon related. But it... The thing they start with is this woman who went to a retreat in Alaska, a NXIVM retreat at a hotel, and then was found killed of a gunshot wound at a lagoon with a suicide note that said, don't look for my body. And she was married to, her wife is like in the documentary, she was married to this woman. But she possibly had an affair with Keith and then possibly got pregnant with his child and announced it at this NXIVM retreat and then was like dragged out and then mysteriously died like a day later. So all signs point to Keith.
Well, it's not hard to even believe any of that, even without him having to be. I mean, he mistreats women in his home and he like controls their diets and he causes them a lot of stress. So I'm like, even if you didn't kill them, like physically,
yeah,
kill them spiritually. Like, yeah, there's no one living with you, or no one living with you over a long period of time is living healthily.
And yeah, they get up to a part, they play like an audio recording of Keith being like, I've had people killed. I could have you killed.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
He literally was like, I've had people killed because of my beliefs.
I'm not surprised because, first of all, how do they have so much footage of him? This is my other question I have for Mark. Boo, you got a lot of tea.
Yeah.
Where did you get all the tea from? You got a lot of tea. Sounds like you were in that kitchen cooking. What's up?
Like, yeah, no, like, what was your collateral? You have, like,
night vision goggles of versions of him being like, we're going to get, like, why is he so comfortable speaking on camera with you? Why do you have all this footage? I need a little more information, my friend. Like,
yeah,
that's the thing that really hooked me when he's trying to, like, you know, that's the reason I'm like, you really wanted to be him, because so much of what is interesting about this documentary is the access that you had. My God.
Right.
They keep replaying that clip when they went to see the Dalai Lama.
Oh,
and he's
my
like
God.
Walking away and he's like, Mark, Mark, Mark. You know, every clip is like, Mark, Mark, Mark. And I'm like, you know, okay, great, you left, but you seem to be like really like removing yourself from a lot of stuff that you saw in real time.
Yeah.
Mark is like the most interesting person in the world to me because he's such a blank. He was in a different cult before Nexium that they haven't talked about called Rantha, which is like way crazier than Nexium.
Yeah,
even
the Rantha stuff is nuts.
Wait, what? How do I not know about Rantha?
Okay, I saw Rantha for the first time at the UFO convention thing I went to last year at the convention center. They had like a Rantha booth. It's like this woman who's like, I'm the reincarnation of like an ancient spirit.
Multiple thousand year old being. And she like has a funny voice that she uses when she's speaking as Rantha.
I mean, I would love to like see a documentary about Rantha, because that one even more is like you're really screening for people that are going to be like, yes, this makes perfect sense to
and
me.
It says actually even more about like, or more like, you know, definitive things about Mark Vicente that he was into that.
He's so impressionable. It's just like...
He seems like that.
Like, what the bleep do we know, too, is just all people being like, what if your cells had little spirits? And you're like, oh my God, you know, what if they did?
Everything he says about himself and the way he grew up, especially in the last episode, where he's like, I was always a weird boy. The boys didn't like me. Because that's how you talk. I was always a weird boy.
That's kind of an incredible impression.
He's South African too, right?
I know. And that accent, I'm not even going to hold y'all. White people from South Africa, that accent really creeps me out.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it's like you sound like a colonizer in a film. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, what's happening? You sound like a villain. And he's just like, yeah, you know. And he's like, I could never fit in. And the boys, they make fun of me. And I was like, you are severely. So here's my thing that I said about Nexium. From jump, I yelled this at the TV, and then I tweeted it, and then I yelled it at TV again. And I was like, this is so crazy. Y'all spend so much money avoiding therapy. Like, this is a therapy avoidance club.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's just
exactly.
A bunch of broken people with no life plan, which is fine.
Because like, therapy isn't a lifestyle. Therapy is like a thing that you commit to, and it's boring, and it's work.
Right. I'm like, y'all giving this more hours than you would need to give therapy. Like, therapy would be less intensive.
And less money.
And just as intense. Like, you would feel all these. Because the other thing that
I
realized is they're...
And you have to go to Albany for therapy.
They're addicted to intense feelings. So it's like a bunch of people who don't have any beliefs or any, like, real say on stuff. And they come into this program and Keith gives them intense feelings. So they're all like, oh, it's working because I feel intensely. Like, the woman who literally starts crying and is like, I used to be bullied by boys in high school. Like, really crazy stuff. And I'm just realizing that they were going through the same thing. I'm like, that's insane. Because you know that don't feel the same.
Yeah.
I was like, you know that does not feel like your trauma.
This sounds so mean, I have to say, but it's like, you know, you assume that a lot of people who get into cults are coming out of like traumatic life experiences or like trying to like mend some harm that's happened to them in the past. Mm. But a lot of the Nexium stuff just feels like, oh, you have nothing that you feel defines you. Like, nothing has happened to you.
Because there are two types of people that join cults. There are people that join cults that are severely traumatized, but the main like bank of cults is people who have they're empty boards.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They don't really have a sense of life. They don't really have a sense of self. They don't really have a sense of purpose. So because they're so white space, whiteboard, you can write anything on them and they're like, I'm just so happy to be of use. I'm just so happy to feel of use.
And that also, that ties in with the constant texting and the tasks and all of that, because I think a lot of these people too, it kind of lost their way in their careers and stuff like that. And they're basically given a job and their job is to self-improve and they have someone they're accountable to. So all of a sudden, and it kind of calls back to Keith's former business, CBI, where it's like a pyramid scheme and you feel like you're an employee of self-improvement. You're way at the bottom. You're constantly being held accountable. And I think in a way that maybe plays into the guilt that some of these people have if their acting careers had slowed down or something like that. And they want to be given like orders. They want to be given jobs. They want to be working hard at something that's this ephemeral thing.
Or they're just like rich and privileged and have no direction in life. And then someone comes in who's like, here's what you should do.
I mean, that feels like the India thing, like that to a T. Yeah. Like that seems like.
And she did it with her mom. She did it with her mom, who also was a rich, privileged person who really didn't have anything to do. She just became an actress.
Yeah.
And like I was talking about this, but on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Teddy Mellencamp, who's John Mellencamp's daughter, runs this thing that's like called an accountability coaching service that turned out to be like, to me, it felt kind of similar to DOS because it's like they're texting you all day to make sure you didn't eat, you know, to be like, show me a picture of your food. Oh, like take those carrots off there, like too many calories. And
carrots?
People pay for this.
What's wrong with a carrot?
No, I can't get into it.
Let us have a carrot.
My mom is one of these people. My mom has never joined a cult, but my mom is extremely susceptible. And I mean, I've had to watch her like try to improve her life through a lot of pyramid schemes and a lot of multi-level marketing schemes to the point where I had to like warn my brother because she was like dragging him into it too. And my mom is the same thing. Like my mom had no, my mom has no life goals. So like she was a teacher and then she like moved here and then she became a nanny and then she became a mom and then she like worked, you know, she's an immigrant. So my mom has like a union job in a hospital that she's had for like 40 years. So she has like tons. She also is like, you know, when she retires, she'll be taken care of. But it's like my mom, I used to watch her like latch on. My mom did like Primerica, like all that stuff. Like mom would just latch on to that stuff because she was just constantly trying to like self-improve. And that's the thing. It's like, it's not just the thing about cults and the thing about this, the vow that made me keep watching it. When I said that I was watching it, I was like, I didn't feel like anyone was particularly stupid. You know, in the beginning, I was like, I don't feel like y'all dumb. And that's the thing that people forget about cults. Like, it's not that they're looking for dumb people. They're looking for vulnerable people.
Yes.
And so when we get so focused on, this is something that happens. It's human, right? We watch this stuff because we're fascinated by like, I would never end up in a cult. Or like, how do I make sure? Let me find out. It's like the morbid way people always ask how someone die so they can know if it was some way they can avoid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you do that and you're always like, how do they do it? But the thing that, the problem with that is that we're all trying to not be victimized so then we don't look at the villain. So the thing that I actually liked about episode 8, even though it was really hard for me to watch because it was so misogynist, it was like so diabolical, was that it was like, now you get to see that this is a manipulative person. These people aren't idiots. You know what I'm saying? Yes, they didn't have a sense of purpose. Yes, they are privileged and they didn't know what they wanted to do with themselves, but that could happen to anybody. You know what I mean? That could happen to anyone at any time. And this person is seeking, you know what I mean? Like he's sniffing out people this way. So that's why I say like hearing all these women harmed themselves or died under duress. It's like, whether he did it or not, it's like this predator manipulated them. And that takes on a physical toll.
Yeah.
One way or another. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, even if you didn't fake her suicide, the fact that she committed suicide right after doing all of that is because of you. It's literally because of you.
Yeah. And episode 9 will have aired by the time this comes out. But I think they're finally going to deal with the fact that like the biggest Nexium contingency that still exists is in Mexico City.
Oh yeah,
there's like an entire wing of Nexium that they haven't talked about at all because they've just been focusing on these white people the whole time.
Yeah,
and then at the very end, they're like, "Oh, also, there's a whole Nexium thing in Mexico City."
But also, it's a very like aristocratic, like Mexico. Well,
it's similar. Yeah, yeah, it's like seeking out rich people.
It's like the son of a former president. Yeah.
It's a city of people who are like, what am I going to do with my life? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I went there in February. It was the last thing I did before. It was the last thing I did before quarantine. And I was walking around. And as someone who survived like gentrified Brooklyn and like come to LA, I was like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm having a good time, but I see why this city is the one y'all pick.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of like art, you know, people that mm-hmm. were in the arts or want to be in the arts, and hear somebody telling you, I'm going to make your dreams come true. I'm going to make that project happen. That big documentary about Nexium, that mm-hmm. what is it called? Like carbon content or something. Mark's documentary that he doesn't
get to make. Oh,
yeah. Oh, I don't know.
His biopic of Keith with the little cutie, horrible, chibi drawings of Keith.
Oh, God, those are very
That's the worst. No, we talked about that. That's like my absolute
favorite.
So
creepy.
He's so creepy. Oh, yeah. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for joining us to talk about The Vow. This has been one of my goals all season, was to get you on to talk about The Vow.
I was like, I've been talking to you about, it's just you and me. It's just me and Molly on the timeline going hard for The Vow. Everyone's like, this is boring. We're like,
No, I'm still in. Nikki, before we let you go, where can people find you on social media?
I am Judd Nikki, JUDNIKKI on every single thing anywhere.
Nice.
I don't have a website because I just don't. And you should watch Laser Wolf on Adult Swim or HBO Max.
When is that coming?
Season one is already out and on HBO Max. Just got to UK. I think it's going to be in Canada soon. And season two is coming out in December. Should be first week of December.
Nice.
Cool. Awesome.
So we got some good surprises for that.
Laser Wolf rules.
Hey, Molly. Hey, Tess.
Hey there, Emily.
Hey, guys.
Shall we take another night call?
Let's do it.
Hey, guys. My name is Jason, and I am a mail carrier and a avid listener of your podcast. And I am thinking about something I could call you guys about. And it's occurred to me that maybe I should let everybody know to put their names in their mailbox before the election, because ballots are coming out in the state that I live in. I'm not going to say the state, but I'm in the western states. Yeah, I just thought that in terms of all the voting issues going on, it would be a good idea for people to make sure, especially if you live in an apartment building, put your name in your mailbox so you'll get your ballot on time without any confusion, to help people get their ballots. A lot of things can go wrong in the mail. We're not perfect. And that's really all I wanted to say. I love your podcast. I don't have any conspiracy theories to share or anything, but I think we've got enough on our hands as it is. So help your mail carrier out this year, and make sure you get your mail and put your name in your mailbox. If you don't want to put it on your in a house where somebody can find out what your name is, put it in your locked mailbox so your mailman can see who lives there. And your mail will get delivered to the appropriate address and on time so we can all vote and get rid of this dystopian reality. Thanks so much for your podcast. Bye.
I am so glad that there is a postal worker who listens to Night Call, at least one.
Yes.
It warms my heart so much. Thank you for calling. I feel like I had this thought prior to getting this call. I think I was just like out, you know, watching my mailman do his rounds. And I was like, I wonder if there any of them listen to Night Call. So this is great. This is just great. Do you guys have your names on your mailboxes?
Actually, when I first heard this call, when it was in our mailbox, our virtual mailbox, I was like, oh, I definitely need to do that. I still get a lot of mail for the previous residents of my house, and they were, I don't know, big Trump supporters. So I always get very nervous when I bring in the mail that someone's going to be like, there goes Tess with her big Trump mailer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Number one Trumpian.
Yep.
they got your number.
So obvious. But yeah, I'm definitely going to put my name in my mailbox. And also, I wanted to say that for anyone out there who wants to track their ballot, this is the first year I've tracked my ballot. I don't know if it was even available before this, but if you do vote by mail, you can go to, I think it's Ballot Tracks, and it makes you feel better just to see it go.
I also signed up for that I even got my ballot.
I'm going to do it. Guys, I don't know. Should I vote in person or vote by mail? I was just going to vote in person, like, because I don't know.
Do you have a mail ballot?
Yeah, I have one.
Well, they have those ballot boxes now that are like special ballot boxes.
The real ones.
Ballots.
The real ones.
The real
Make
ones.
Sure it's a real one.
Research
Make sure
your ballot it's a real box. One.
But what I did last year was filled out my vote by mail ballot and then just turned it in person.
I've done that too.
That's what I was thinking of doing, just so that I can see it. I don't know.
I just wanted mine in. They start counting the ballots as soon as they are received. And I part of it is that I have such crushing anxiety, as I'm sure everybody does about this election, mm-hmm. that I just wanted to know that I had done it.
Yeah.
And then whatever yeah. happens in the next few, you know, weeks, that it's been done and I know it's been counted. But I mean, yeah, there's so much anxiety about all of this and names going on the mailbox, guys.
Yeah, I always do it just because I move so much in general. Like I move on an average of once a year. And so there's always I'm always getting other people's mails. I've gotten other people's ballots. This has happened to a lot of people. I got somebody else's ballot and like I'm not exactly sure what to do with it. But yeah, I think like just, you know, especially now. And also, especially like, I don't know, when everything is happening via mail because we're not going out. Like, I don't know. It's just smart. Don't get your packages stolen, etc.
Yep.
Yeah, it's nice for a mail carrier to sort of confirm that like sometimes the mail has problems and be careful with your mail.
So on a totally different topic, I would like to thank all of our listeners for being so enthusiastic about Pyramid Pals. This was a shockingly enthusiastic topic. We now are going to be branching out a bit from just pyramids to also mounds. This was Mounds and Rids. I think Emily coined that.
I just want to get into calling pyramids rids.
Rids.
You know, check out some rids.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s,
she looked like a million bucks,
with zero qualifications,
she had a Harvard plaque,
tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we got a bunch of interesting emails and calls about these formations. So let's start with a call about some mounds, just to mix it up a little bit.
Hey, Nightcall. So I was just calling about the pyramids, a pyramid pal from last week. So first weird thing, I'm actually related to Oaks Ames. My mom found this out about 6 months ago when she's been doing a ton of genealogy in the last 6 months and found that out. And yeah, turns out lots of shady dealings. Other thing, I wondered if you guys could talk about mounds. So there are pyramids, but also the mounds of North America are really cool. The Cahokia mounds are the ones in particular that I'm thinking about. They just kind of look like giant dirt mounds, but when you start to research them, and if you've ever been to them, they have a lot of exhibits about this, that they used to be really big pyramids, and the mounds are kind of just the base, and then above that they had these giant wooden structures for sort of worship, sacrifice, rule, who knows. So anyway, I think that's great. Bye.
I love mounds. How do you guys feel about mounds? Mounds freak me out a lot.
Mounds rule.
I'm pretty freaked out by mounds. Just the idea that I could not know it was. I mean, anything I might not recognize as being there, but is there, is kind of scary to me. But they're fascinating. I actually was not familiar with the Cahokia mounds. They're across the Mississippi River from St. Louis, and they're pretty ancient. And they do just kind of look like hills. And then you can see there's stairs going up the hills. But they're fascinating.
Yeah. It's super cool. The first mounds that I was familiar with were actually natural mounds. These are in Washington State. But you would assume
Mima
that they
mounds.
Were... What?
I just started laughing at the Mima mounds.
They're the Mima mounds. And they are... They actually look much more unnatural than the Cahokia mounds. They look like something that was put there as like a land work type thing. But they're apparently caused by maybe gophers. Nobody really quite knows why they form, but they just look like acne basically on the surface of the earth. It's just like bumps. It's very strange, but yeah, they give me a weird feeling. It's like what's the fear of small dots, but like in
the holes?
Yeah, the holes fear. It gives me that feeling. It's on a massive scale.
It's kind of the opposite of the holes, but I guess it also is not the opposite of the holes because there's holes in the mounds.
Yeah.
Earth is so cool.
Earth is so cool. And also, we were talking about the fact that, you know, pyramid pals, we could go on forever, but we're also very interested in just strange or mysterious dwellings. So if you have a weird building, mound, thing that is inhabitable, please give us a night call about it at 240-46-NIGHT. You can also text us at that number or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. But we should also move on with more pyramids.
Oh, we got more pyramids.
We got more pyramids.
So many pyramid emails. We got one from our listener, Avora, who works at the Center for Land Use Interpretation, which I don't know about you, big fan. Also very stoked that somebody from Center for Land Use Interpretation listens to the pod, as stoked as I am that somebody who works for the U.S. Postal Service listens to the pod.
I'm a big fan of Aurora. We should have her on sometime.
Yes, Aurora, come on the pod.
She also does one of my favorite Instagram series, which is Castles of Burbank, I believe.
Oh, cool.
She takes pictures of, maybe it's just the LA, but it's like she takes pictures of a lot of buildings that are in the form of fake castles of all kinds.
There's a really good fake castle by where I live that I should show you guys sometime. It's insane. But this is Aurora's email. She says, American pyramids have been an ongoing topic of personal interest and of interest at the Center for Land Use Interpretation, where I work. Here's a pyramid collection we've been working on over the years. We'll link to it in our show notes. And a silly poster of some pyramids of the USA I put together for an art book fair a couple years ago. One of my favorite American pyramids is the Center of the World and Museum of History and Granite at Felicity near the California and Arizona border along Highway 8. It's a truly special place, and you can get a taste of it through its website, which we will also link to in the show notes. It's been a few years since I've been out there, but it seems to still be open to visitors, and I highly recommend stopping by if you're in the area. And then she also tells us about the former steel case / current switch pyramid near Grand Rapids. And she says it's also especially curious, built in 1989 as the corporate development center for the somewhat utopian office furniture / design company steel case. In 2016, it was sold to Switch and adapted into a massive data center. Unlike the Center of the World, this pyramid is not open to visitors, but you can check out the corporate video walkthrough here.
I love the phrase utopian office furniture / design company. Utopian office furniture.
I approve of the Steelcase brand. I've never heard it referred to as utopian, but I get it on like a gut level. My desk is a Steelcase desk. I love, yeah, it's a good brand.
We just love pyramids.
Oh my God. The Steelcase one, I want to start with that one just because this is my favorite from a aesthetic position. It looks the most like the pyramids in Blade Runner of any of these that we've seen so far, because it's not a sheer glass side like the Luxor or like the AstraZeneca pyramid. It's this sort of tiered thing, but it's not a ziggurat type structure. It is a pyramid that goes up, but at each, what you can tell is like a floor in it, and it only looks like it's maybe 5 stories tall. It's not that tall, but it's a very broad pyramid. And it looks very 80s, very space age, very Star Trek. It's so cool.
It's perfect.
It's beautiful. I highly recommend people check it out. We will link to it in the notes.
Yeah. I mean, I think we just love retrofuturistic things, and like nothing is more retrofuturistic than the pyramids, because the ancient Egyptian pyramids obviously still feel incredibly futuristic. And it feels like there's still stuff that is not, you know, people, we don't know about it.
It also feels like, you know, and on one hand, it feels like it feels cool because it's not the most efficient use of space. Like it's mm-hmm. not a box, which is endlessly, you know, you can stack a zillion boxes next to each other and it's a city and they all, you know, can fit very tightly next to each other and all the airspace is taken up. But then it's also like, the Egyptians had to be onto something with the structure of the pyramid. Like, that's why they're still standing. Like, it's a very structurally sound form of architecture. It's just not, like, spatially efficient in the way that we're used to now, but that's why it feels, like, kind of special, I guess.
Yeah, fuck being spatially efficient.
Yeah. Who wants a box?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, maybe the geodesic dome is, like, the thing that is more spatially efficient, but it does just feel like there are so many ways to make dwellings. Why do we just make this one kind of dwelling? I would love to live in a mound.
I mean, the dome is kind of the skeleton of a mound.
Yeah. You want to live in a hobbit house, is what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I love natural houses. And I think that just looking at ways people were dwelling, you know, in pre-Columbian America mm-hmm. is very useful, because it is not like we have done such a great job with the land use.
Yeah.
With the colonizing. It's just like, especially with climate change, it just feels like finding ways that are more to build housing that's more in tune with nature, earth houses, stuff like that.
You know what the steel case pyramid made me think of is, what if we could make bricks from our trash, you know, like recyclables and stuff like that, and build pyramids that look like the steel case pyramid, Wall-E style?
That's a great idea, to build like a Watts Tower style pyramid. Yeah. I mean, I spend so much time on Wikipedia on the like outsider architecture page and stuff like that, American pyramids. There are so many cool things that people built with like no money, just out of trash. And we have so much trash.
And I think there have been articles recently about how, you know, trash that's kind of like thoughtfully disposed of can kind of become part of the environment in a non-harmful way. But honestly, like, you look at the steel case pyramid and tell me we couldn't make a trash pyramid to live in that would be very efficient.
Oh, I told you guys I have a crushed file cabinet here. That's our base. Like,
that's the base. Or that could be the top.
And you know why it's crushed? Because I didn't get a steel case. Steel case. Built to last.
That's right.
Sponsor us.
Should we take another night email?
Sure.
Okay, this one comes from Jonathan. Hi, Night Call. This week's discussion of AstraZeneca brought to mind New England's other great pyramid, the Apex Pyramid of Pawtucket, Rhode Island. The Apex Pyramid is a ziggurat-shaped former department store visible right next to Interstate 95 just north of Providence. It was built in 1969 and designed by Andrew Geller, who is best known as one of the designers of the model home in which Nixon and Khrushchev's kitchen debate took place. The department store closed in the early 2000s and the DMV moved in. I got my first license there. It's partially reopened as a store and is the subject of an intense preservation debate. Namely, whether it's a true landmark or an eyesore that should be replaced with a soccer stadium. Growing up here, I know multiple people who have had dreams about climbing it. As a former archaeologist, I can say that this is the best pyramid I've visited. The second best is the Great Pyramid of Giza. Two things that boggle the mind about it. That's great. Unlike other Egyptian monuments, the Great Pyramid is completely unadorned inside. No hieroglyphs, no carvings. The King's Chamber is just bare polished stone with the 4-foot-high base of a similarly undecorated granite sarcophagus off to the side. It's uniquely creepy. When I went, two middle-aged American ladies were sitting on the floor and chanting in an attempt to commune with whatever was responsible for the spooky vibes there. The pyramid is about 251 yards on each side and is only 0.05% from being a perfect square, less than 4.5 inches. I've also driven past the Bass Pro Pyramid in Memphis with the friend I visited Egypt with. We've tried to complete our pyramid punch cards with a visit to Nicolas Cage's pyramid's future tomb in New Orleans, but we couldn't quite find it.
So this Apex Pyramid, this one looks much more like a 70s church. I'm going to say it has that vibe. To me, I'm not as big of a fan of this pyramid. This guy speaks very, very highly of it. So maybe
he speaks highly of it personally. I'd rather see the Great Pyramid of Giza. No,
that was very
funny.
This
pyramid, but it does have kind of, it looks like a Pizza Hut.
Yeah, it kind of has that, like the roof of an old McDonald's type thing.
I, though, can understand wanting to climb it because it looks like there are a lot of great places to sit because stacked, you know?
But it also looks like it might cave in if you sat on it. It looks kind of flimsy.
That's true.
But looking at it, I was reminded of like that kind of era of architecture. And I was like, how have I not mentioned Key Arena in Seattle? Again, coming in with the Washington State references here. That was a basketball area. It was where the Sonics played. And it is a weird thing because it's not exactly a pyramid, but it ends up looking like a pyramid. It's more like kind of a tent type structure. But it's raised up, so it doesn't go all the way to the ground. It's like there's glass sides on it, and then this sort of tent roof that comes to a point in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I have a real soft spot for that kind of 70s and 80s, like, brutalist futurism. Mm-hmm. I understand why other people might think it is ugly or, you know, an eyesore, but compared to, like, the horrible everything being glass style of now...
Oh, yeah.
I find it a much more, I mean, maybe it's just because that is our nostalgia for being younger, but no, I just find it doesn't feel as, those just glass and steel buildings, like the fucking SoFi Stadium that is allegedly opening, but, you know, COVID is just like so Blade Runner-y in a way that's genuinely dystopian. It has no warmth to it whatsoever. It's all glass and steel. These have like warmth to them to me.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing would be to talk to kids who are, you know, going to games at structures like this, like the new, like that kind of structure, like a new shiny arena, and see how they feel about it. Cause like when I look at the Key Arena, I'm thinking about myself as like a child, like a young child, and like how it looked so cool and adventurous, and like I wanted to like climb all over it. It looked like a fun, inviting structure, even though it's crazy looking. And I wonder if kids feel that way about this sort of nouveau architecture, that like this glass and steel stuff that's so dominant now. Like, does a kid look at the SoFi Stadium and be like, cool, I want to explore it? Does it?
I don't think anybody looks at SoFi Stadium and thinks cool.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that, like you were saying though, like, I'm sure that there, when these structures were contemporary, people were like, ugh, what an eyesore.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's interesting about SoFi is that it's like half built. So it does feel very like a ruins in progress.
Like
it
a half like, Death Star.
Yeah. Or they did have the half Death Star on Wilshire for so long.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
the new film museum mm-hmm. that's opening that is literally in the shape of the Death Star.
Yeah.
Because it's a George Lucas museum. But like a lot of things, it's like they either ran out of funding or just, you know, couldn't finish it on schedule. So there was this half built Death Star on Wilshire and Fairfax for years. And I liked that way more than the completed thing, obviously.
Yeah, it always made that part of Miracle Mile feel just like a little stressful, though.
It's like, yeah.
I mean, that is a stressful part. But yeah, I mean, I think also we're coming to this point where people are like, should we preserve some of these buildings that are like these 70s and 80s buildings that people are very divided on aesthetically? They just knocked down LACMA here, which is a building that a lot of people like. It's
yeah.
like a 50s building, actually, but it was very glass bricky.
Was it limestone?
I mean, it was very sort of ancient Egyptian-y to me always. I felt like it had sort of a pyramid feel, even though it wasn't a pyramid.
No, it felt,
and there's that great Japanese pavilion that was really like a spiral staircase building, like an upside down Guggenheim.
Yeah. No, it's weird to like, I think also the thing that kind of throws me off about the newer, like whatever our contemporary version is of these pyramid buildings.
I just
stuff,
call it like Apple Store core.
Sure. Yeah. I guess a lot of it just feels really cheap to me. It feels really like flimsy. A lot of condo buildings that are supposedly luxury buildings, I look at them, and especially like in LA when places get like dirty really easily because it doesn't rain ever. It just looks like it can so easily turn into just looking really, really crappy. And that's poor design. Like,
well, there's all that stuff now. That's like what they built a million of in every city. You know, people call them like the gentrification blocks, but they're those apartment buildings that look like a bunch of Lego blocks.
Yeah.
And what they really look like to me is just like twee brutalism.
Yeah.
It's like brutalism, and then they'll be painted a fun color.
Yeah, there's a fun color on it.
Like you were saying, it's like then they get dirty and it's just brutalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for whatever happens after coronavirus. Like if we somehow adapt our architecture to reflect how this has changed everything. Because I also think that a lot of those kind of like luxury, you know, condo buildings and luxury apartment buildings that spring up that are also uniform inside, they're all open floor plans. Having them be all glass and steel really lends itself to these big open rooms with big high ceilings. And I think that's just not what anyone needs right now. And I think that we're going to have to adapt to assuming that, you know, pandemics are, because we've lived through it for the better part of a year and potentially could again, like what kind of architecture reflects being caught at home, you know?
You know
for
what
months
I'm
and
looking
months?
Forward to is like, you know how during the energy crisis in the 70s, like there are a lot of structures that just don't have windows because they weren't energy efficient. Like, what if all of these glass buildings have to get greened and just get like covered up in bricks? Like get
encased in a shell, yeah. in a candy shell.
Yeah. What if they have to get greened and we just let like annihilation plants take over?
There we go. Yeah, that would look cool.
I'm very excited by the idea of, you know, more outdoor spaces being attached to units, like having there be more of an outdoor zone inside of apartments. And I think that having bedrooms with built-in work areas, even though that's probably awful for your emotional well-being, it's, you know, having everyone have a work area and envisioning like a two-bedroom with three people in it or four people in it where everyone has a space to work. Like I'm excited by the idea that an end of an era is coming and like we have to get more creative now.
Well, that's like what the Total Recall isolation tanks will be for.
Maybe.
We're dancing around the obvious here, though, which is the Night Call pyramid.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going glass bricks, guys.
I'm going brick bricks, I think.
I'm going trash bricks. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so clearly we combine all these ideas and what we do is make one out of like Coke bottles.
Yeah, or there's layers to it. There's strata.
And we do chia seeds around them so stuff grows on them.
Yeah, we need to have some sprouts in the mix.
Just to wrap up our Pyramid Pals segment for this week, we may have a real Pyramid Pal connection with two night callers or night emailers. So the previous emailer sent us his email. Then I checked the email box and I noticed an almost identical email from Emily, not Emily Yoshida, but night caller Emily. And she was also talking about the Apex Pyramid. I won't read the entire email because it includes a lot of the information in Jonathan's. But I will say that she did report, as a side note, I went to the Bass Pro Shops Pyramid back in 2015. The entire place was sensory overload, but you could also feel this vast, empty, dark space looming above you. It reminded me a lot of the Blue Bayou restaurant at Disneyland or the areas in Vegas with fake painted ceilings. I don't have many pictures, but I do remember playing a fake duck hunting game. But I think that maybe these two should be real Pyramid Pals.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe this was the end of the road that we were always leading to.
They were linked by the ziggurat. Yeah.
They were. So you guys should correspond, maybe.
Well, thank you, everybody, for your pyramid emails and calls. I jokingly created a segment called Pyramid Pals, and you all delivered, so thank you so much. Keep sending them in. Also, send in other we don't have to be pyramid specific. Any strange structures that have an interesting story that you're into, give us a night call at 1-240-46-NIGHT and share them with us. We love them, obviously, and we will see you all next week. You can follow us on social media if you're not already. We are on Twitter at NightCallPod and Instagram and Facebook at NightCallPodcast. You can subscribe to our podcast and rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. We would really appreciate that. Helps people find our show. And you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/nightcall, where you can get our bonus episodes, our newsletter, and a lot of other fun stuff. So check it out. And we will see you all next week. Goodbye, Pyramid Pals.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.